All right, we're live, Dynasty Dads After Dark. We're even hitting it with video tonight, so we'll see how this comes through. But it's about 10 o'clock here. We're all Central Time Zone, but this might be the latest start for the dads as we sit by and watch some baby monitors and hope our kids don't wake while we just try to chop it up and talk a little football. So we've got Dynasty Dad Eli with us, and we've got Dynasty Dad, recent dad of two, Sam on. What's going on, guys?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, I feel like, Emily is actually within this month, we'll be having our second as well. So I'll be right there with you guys. But so I'm enjoying the little bit of sleep that I get as after talking to you guys right before we started hitting record, I was reminded quite quickly of that newborn stage. So Sam, how's it going for you?
It's going pretty well. Glad to be a part of this. Super fun. I've been listening to the podcasts basically since they started, usually while I'm mowing the lawn or something of that nature. And so I've really enjoyed all of the podcasts, and it's awesome. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to being a part of it, I guess I should say. And as far as newborn, it's an adventure. It's awesome. And also can be a lot when you want to sleep at 3 a.m. and they don't. So overall, it's good though. Yeah, we just had newborn pictures today. Old student who does photography came over to take pictures, and you know, the one day that my older one doesn't want to be happy and say cheese in front of a camera, and so you know that's exactly how it goes, right? So anyway, that's life right now for me.
That sounds familiar. I want to get me a magnet, okay, for my fridge.
Will do.
No, this is awesome, man. What kind of? I love doing the brother podcasts. I know Ben and Pete have combined for some podcasting. So finally our turn, and Jonathan, one of our oldest friends. Hopefully Josh jumps on here. He's not in the dad group. So I don't know if we can get Josh on here yet. It's going to take some time. Oh, Jonathan, I see someone behind you.
Hey, is that Christy? Dynasty mom. Christy is.
Speaking of oldest friends. Hey, Christy.
Yes, right
now. Yep. Although we're not on Twitch. So do you need something? Can I do something for you?
I just wanted to mop it.
Okay. Bye, Christy. Oh yeah, she wanted to shout out that she body checked Jared Allen at Urban Market tonight. So
oh no way.
I come back to the table. I'm like, do you know who you just brush shoulders with? And huh? And I said, that's Jared Allen. And she kind of thought about him. She's like, oh yeah, I actually kind of remember him. I liked him. And then we're sitting there at the table, and I'm kind of still like in my head, like thinking, is he like still, maybe can I go like track him down and have a conversation? And I think he's long gone now. And later in the dinner, we're like sitting at the table, and a local like holistic dentist sits down at the table next to us, and she knows this dentist from her like mom hippie groups on Facebook. And so she's like, I'm geeking out about a football player that I saw, and she's like, do you know who that is? He's gonna clean our family's teeth. And like, okay, cool. So yeah, different strokes.
Celebrities tonight, very nice.
Mm-hmm. The stars were out in Franklin, let me tell you.
Well, I'm not surprised at all that he's in Tennessee. I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that he lives here. Now I got to do some recon. I thought he had a ranch in like Oklahoma or Texas. And then I know he's legitimately trying to be an Olympic curler. And he'd been like training, I think, against some of the big like dogs from Duluth. So even though he's got like the sport, like Minnesota sports ties, I think that he's maybe curling with guys out of Tennessee. If I can keep it all straight, I think that's what I remember hearing. I mean, I think that's what we talked about over our nice dinner tonight. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, no. Anyways, I better figure that out. But yeah, it was funny. I was looking at the dude, I was like, you look familiar. All right, mullet. And then like, I'm like, where is that barbed wire tattoo on your bicep? And I got like a tiny peek out of it under his shirt. I'm like, yep. That's the man, the myth, the legend. Just wasn't riding on a horse like we last saw him entering the Vikings Ring of Honor. So anyways, kind of cool.
Purple pride, baby. Skull Vikes. All right, well, let's curl this conversation right back to fail fantasy.
Hold on. Sorry, because you said Skull Vikes, I have to try to pull something up here. Let me see. Can airdrop? No, I can't. I'm just going to play something from my phone, and we'll see if it works. But Bedtime, like talk time with 4 year old has been a lot of Vikings chatter as football season gets closer. And I got a couple of these gold nuggets here. This one's a quick hitter. Let me know if you can hear this when I press play here. Okay. Can you hear that?
Hey, one more time.
Go JJ, favorite player.
Justin yeah, Jefferson. We can't hear him.
Is it not clear, or is the audio not picking up?
It picks not up at the clear. Very end. Not very clear.
Okay, I'll figure it out later. Anyways, I've got some fun kid stuff. Sorry, Eli, go ahead.
No, it's good, man. This is Dynasty Dads. That's what we do. I love it. I can't. I'm ready to see some Mackenzie Viking cheers. So yeah, send as many videos my way as you want. All right. Well, let's start out with we've had like three or four huge trades since our last podcast, talking about we went over position groups, favorite position groups, and a little bit of later draft stuff. So I'm going to, Sam, if you don't mind, maybe I'll kick it over to you right away. Because I was part of, I think, the earliest trade with Ben. I traded ETN, Njoku, and his 24 first for Jalen Waddle. I'm pretty excited about it from my standpoint. I got the one bigger player in the trade. Obviously, Ben got a lot of, pretty good sized pieces in that trade. It's really easy to, I think it's, we've talked about this before on the podcast. It's really easy to say whoever gets the best player wins, but depending on what happens in the trade, that's obviously not always true. So, what was your impression when you saw the trade, and, do you think there's a clear winner, or what do you think happened there?
Honestly, I thought it was a good trade for both sides. I think, yeah, it's hard to say best player, and I might be a little biased because of a recent trade. As far as best player means that you win the trade, because I think that definitely helps the person immediately. But I think when I look at your receiving group, I think that makes you super strong. And in our league, receiver is important, and so getting Ridley is a big deal. But yeah, I think both sides came out in a fair way, and so yeah, I liked it. I liked it for both of you guys.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I say I'm kind of there too. Jonathan, do you have any input, or do you want to jump over to your big trades?
Well, I like the trade for you, Eli. I kind of was surprised to see Ben move off of Waddle. He's rightfully been pretty hyped about the fact that he's got or had three of the top five or six ish dynasty wide receivers. And so given the longevity of the position and the youth of the three guys that he had, Lamb, Brown, and Waddle, I'm surprised that he broke that up at all for basically a pivot to, I think, what is at best a similar kind of tier player. But honestly, it's hard for me to like say that ETN is in the same tier of running backs as Waddle is for receivers. I don't think that's the case. Although there was some nice training camp hype today that came out of Jacksonville. I think it was Peterson that said we want ETN to have 16 or 1700 yards on the ground or something like that. So if he does good there, if Njoku shores up Ben's already really deep tight end room, like that's another one that, like, given his depth of the position, doesn't, it's like, sure, nice to have, but doesn't make sense for Ben a ton right now. And yes, I know there's a pick in there, but for me, I think in this case, as is oftentimes the case, the team receiving the best player in the deal won the trade. And I think you did that here, Eli.
All right. Well, time will tell. So speaking of time will tell, let's go to Jonathan. What was your trade, or Sam, you can break whoever, I don't have it in front of me. Want to break down the, I know Jonathan Taylor was involved with your trade with Chris, Jonathan.
Yeah. So I ended up trading Najee Harris and three first round picks for JT, DeAndre Swift, Gerald Everett, who unfortunately might be my best tight end on the roster. And then we also swapped handcuffs. So I gave him Jalen Warren to cuff with Najee. And he sent me Tyler Allgeier as a Bijan insurance policy. I think I also got his like way future second back in the deal, but let's kind of ignore that 26 second. I traded Najee and three firsts for JT, Bijan, Everett, and some handcuff swaps. And so for me, it really came down to, I think Najee is, he's set for a big year. And I think that I like him more than DeAndre Swift. He's probably a tier ahead of Swift, but I think Taylor is the top tier. I think the top tier for dynasty runners is Bijan, Taylor, Breece, and hard to put McCaffrey in there because he's 27, certainly this year. And that, you know, we'll talk about why I targeted McCaffrey in a second, but like, I think JT is certainly up there now. Of course, I made the move the day that the news came out, or it came out after the move was made. And so, that probably would have helped me save a little bit and, deflated his cost slightly. But, at the end of the day, I'm not concerned about him playing this year. His contract doesn't toll or whatever the language is. If he doesn't show up, like, he basically would have to go back and, you know, be on his rookie deal another year next year. So like, it just doesn't make sense. Unfortunately, running backs really have no leverage right now in the league. So I'm not too concerned about that deal, but yeah, for me, three firsts is definitely a kind of a gold standard price to pay for a top tier asset. And I imagine that we have lots of owners in the league that wouldn't pay three firsts for any running back. Maybe they wouldn't pay three firsts for any player. The way I looked at the picks were, one was in 26. One was Brent's next year, and I expect Brent to be a playoff team. And then one was yours, Eli, the following year in 25. And you've got a kink for finishing in seventh place, but I think your team's trending in the right direction. So like, I view that as like a mid to late pick as well. So 26 is a total crapshoot, but it's mine and I hope to continue to be good then. So like, the way I'm thinking about it is like, it's three late firsts spread out over the next 3 years. So I'd trade those three straight up for JT. And then I basically got DeAndre Swift, a tight end, and a second round pick for Najee Harris. So while I like Harris more than Swift, like, that combined with getting that like Swift deal through the door was good enough value for me to pull the trigger.
Sure. Sam, what do you think of Najee Harris? I'm a little, and the trade overall, I'm a little biased with Najee. I have that slight hope that he kind of fails since I traded him to Jonathan last year. You know, I think everybody kind of gets that little, like, it's hard to root for the guy that you just traded for. But so what do you think of Najee Harris coming up this year after kind of struggling last year? And what do you think overall the trade, especially how Jonathan broke it down? Three firsts for Taylor and then Najee and Warren for the rest. What do you think of the package?
Yeah, this is a trade where I really thought, yeah, both. I see where Jonathan was coming from. And I think if I were Jonathan, I'd pull that trigger, especially being team running backs. I mean, how can you not go after a guy like Jonathan Taylor? But I think it was a good trade for Jonathan. I think for Chris, I guess I want to see what he ends up doing with those picks. Straight up, it seems interesting for a guy who has the talent to compete to move a guy like JT. But at the same time, those picks could be used in lots of different ways, and not just waiting 3 years to draft the one in 26 and 2 years in 25. So we'll see what he does with them. But yeah, anyway, I think it's a good trade for, I would lean on the Jonathan side as far as winning it, but I like Najee personally. I don't think last year I think he's going to have a better year than last year. Just as a player, I like him, but at the same time, I think you guys have said it on a previous pod. You know, he took a lot of hits in college. He's taken a lot of hits. He's got a lot of wear on him. And so, running backs in general, like, they don't last as long. And so, what does he have left? I don't know, but I think he's got enough left that he's still worth rostering and starting and all the rest. So anyway, I think it was a good trade on both sides.
Sam, you brought up something like that was top of mind for me, which I almost like spoiled my own deal by telling Chris before I accepted, like, I don't understand this deal for you. You're taking a better running back out of your starting lineup for, so a step down at a position player here, an additional like startable player in Swift from potentially being flexed for future picks, which unless you've got a, you know, a deal lined up, like, I don't understand why that makes sense for you competing now. Now I know he's shopping those picks, but he doesn't have anything in place yet.
I think that's what, I mean, that's kind of what Chris does, and it's what he does well and why his team always competes, is he doesn't ever turn down a trade where he thinks or knows he's getting the value, regardless if he has a trade lined up. So he's got all these firsts in his pocket now. And obviously if the whole league is just like, oh, your team looks really good, I don't want to give you any really great player for you, even if I'm getting all these firsts, and they don't think like he does and say, I just want to take the value, and they want to, you know, try to guard the league in that way, which, you know, I think some people think that way. I've definitely thought that way in the past at certain times. Then he could be in trouble, and he could, yeah, his mission fails. But if he can package these three firsts and maybe even another first, I mean, four firsts can get you anybody probably except for JJ in this league. I feel like JJ is like the only untouchable player.
Any
I
don't know what quarterback. Yeah.
Non-quarterback. Well, and his team, he's got Mahomes and Jackson, which I think he likes Jackson more than anyone in this league. So I don't think he needs to move on to quarterback. So
yeah, he loves Lamar's incredible balls.
Absolutely.
Well, and yeah. I feel like in our league, firsts have such a value, and so many people want a first back if they have any level of premium player. So like in trade conversations, it's really hard to get to trade for somebody without a first. As somebody who gets rid of their firsts immediately, I experience that. Like as soon as I sell it, then the next trade talk, that's what somebody else wants, you know. And so him picking up a bunch of firsts gives him flexibility, if nothing else, and that's a valuable thing in our league.
Yeah. Speaking of like trades that don't make sense for the teams involved, between that trade and the trade Sam and I make, Brent shipped James Conner to Peter. And Connor's got to be one of the highest kind of win now players right now, where he's got very low long-term upside dynasty value, but he's in an offense that definitely needs to feed him and will run a lot through him. He was productive last year. And I think most people would have agreed, like value-wise, I think second round pick makes sense. I don't think anybody's going to pay a first for James Conner. Maybe somebody would have juiced on top of a second. I don't know. But the move for Brent, again, being like a win now team, sending that player to Peter, who's clearly in rebuild mode. I don't think Peter's going to be in danger of eating waffles again, but he's definitely more likely to be on the outside looking in. And I don't think James Conner changes his playoff chances meaningfully this year. So that move was interesting to me. And I suppose Peter's angle has got to be, I'm going to sit on this guy and flip him at the trade deadline to somebody for more than a second, or at least that second, and he'll get me points until then. But do you guys like have any other thoughts on that one?
Yeah, it feels like kind of what we were just saying about Chris, like he's trading for, I'm assuming he's wanting a second because he feels like that's a more movable asset than Connor in other trade talks or something. It feels like a move to get you somewhere, not the end of the goal. But and then as far as Peter's concerned, yeah, it seems like an odd player to target, but if that's the best running back he can get with a second round pick right now and he wants to up that value on his starting roster, I guess it wouldn't have been a trade I would make if I were him, but I can understand what he's trying to do.
Right, just get value out of a guy who's aging. But yeah, I'm with you. I thought I was kind of confused too. If I had James Conner this year, I'd rather have the player than the second round pick. But yeah, it's one of those things, you get rid of a guy who's aging, so you get some value. And yeah, it was interesting. I wouldn't have expected it, especially because, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, I was going to say, I put an offer in for Conner and never heard back, and then all of a sudden Conner's gone, but that's okay. That's how it goes. All right. All right. What's that?
Well, just one thought. I feel like sometimes when you have an aging player on your faster. They burn a hole in your pocket faster than people on the outside. Like when I traded Keenan Allen during the draft, it was the like, there's a feeling I've had him on my roster for whatever, 3 years. And you're getting to that age. It's like, I got to sell him now if I'm going to get anything for him. And that may or may not be true. But sometimes the guys on your roster that are aging, I don't know, burn that hole in your pocket. Like I want something for him before he's worth nothing. And so maybe that's what he was feeling with Connor.
All right. Well, here, that leads us right into the next trade. Is that how you felt with CMC, Sam? CMC gone, and a CMC in a fourth for Terry McLaurin, Javonte Williams, Tucker Kraft, and a 2026 second. So mostly Javonte Williams, McLaurin, and McLaurin for McCaffrey. Sam, was McCaffrey burning a hole in your pocket?
No, honestly, it was a really hard guy to trade away. But I've been looking at my roster for, since the year ended, and was feeling like in order for my team, I feel like for the last few years, I'm always in the fourth place, third place, fifth place. I'm like right in that range, and I could keep rolling back my team that's good enough to make the playoffs every year. But in order to take another step, I need to do something different. I need to have different guys on the roster. So I've traded away a few bigger name people. This probably being the biggest name. And my plan was not to trade him away, but I've been trying to make trades with other guys on my roster to help the starting lineup overall. I have one or two flex spots that could definitely improve at the bottom of my roster. And if I'm going to compete in the playoffs, then I need guys like a Terry McLaurin to be in that spot, and other players that I was trying to trade or with picks that aren't firsts weren't getting the job done. And so Jonathan came calling with some players that if they all play to their potential, then I feel good about the trade. But definitely feel like taking a risk, Javonte coming off an injury, like you just never know. At the same time, McCaffrey had back-to-back injury seasons, and so you just never know with him either. And I was like, if I can get the value out of him now, then I probably should. And so felt like Jonathan offered enough to make it worth my while. And I just hope I don't regret it.
Yeah. And Jonathan, are you happier to have McCaffrey or happier to not have two Washington receivers in your lineup?
Maybe both equal. I was not willing to sell either one of them below value, but given that they're likely to be led by Sam Howell, or if things go well, Jacoby Brissett, not in love with that offense. I think the philosophy for Sam and I in this trade was similar, but just coming at it from like with different motivations. Like Sam wanted to improve the bottom of his starting roster, and I wanted to up level guys already in my lineup because I felt like I had strong depth that I wasn't going to be able to plug in. So as I got JT and Swift to a lesser degree, and as my rosters started to round out and to be what I think is a competitive lineup for this year, I live so much in dynasty land, but like I've mentally made a bit of a switch to like, okay, what are redraft rankings? So, and like, who are the best players that I could plug into my lineup, and like, where are positional players where I could like take them and add another player, add a pick and improve that. And so I'm looking at my lineup and I'm seeing that every week I'm going to have three guys that I would otherwise like to start on my bench. Those guys most likely being Jahan Dotson, Michael Pittman, J.K. Dobbins. Those are all good players. Maybe not all elite. There's varying levels of upside. And if it's not those three, then it's Terry or it's Swift. But like that's the collection of guys, those five that I'm making roster decisions, and I can only start two of them each week. And so as I'm trying to figure out like, how can I improve? How can I get more points out of the guys in my lineup? To me, like CMC can be projected for 17 or 18 and can easily score 30. And so if this year coming off an injury, Javonte is a 10 to 15 point player and McCaffrey has a lot more upside, that's like where my head's at. Now, Sam called out the injury stuff. All news out of Broncos camp has been Javonte's way ahead of schedule. He's, you know, kind of playing the preseason. He's wearing pads. He's not taking days off. He's only 23 years old. And last year, before the injury, he was a consensus top five dynasty running back. Whereas McCaffrey's 27. So certainly a win now play. And I hope that I can get more than 1 year out of McCaffrey in this. But there's like, yeah, some risk on my end because injury stuff aside, like if he goes down, obviously I put all my eggs in one basket instead of spread out across two. And Terry, despite the Washington mess at quarterback last year, finished as a wide receiver one in our league. He was wide receiver 14, but he's a top guy. And so I think that Sam got two strong startable assets there. But ultimately, yeah, the move for me was I'm sick of seeing guys that I like sitting on my bench. So like, how can I take them, package them, and like improve the points that I'm able to score on a weekly basis? And for those out there with studs, that is still something I'm interested in doing. And you know, my current holes are, you know, lacking of a true elite wide receiver and a tight end that I still feel good about. So I'm still interested in making some moves. I've got some depth, and I'm still sitting on three firsts. So it's a long season, and we got quite a while till a true playoff push. But that's kind of the mindset shift that I've had with my roster for this year now.
Yeah, and I think I say you guys broke it down really well. That's pretty much how I interpreted this trade when I saw it. And I think, yeah, like Jonathan, you said, putting all your eggs in one basket with McCaffrey if he goes down. But like you said, you've got the depth to replace that if he does go down. So your eggs really aren't all in that one basket. And then Sam, yeah, I think you didn't, you know, you're filling out that roster more. And I think when we look at these trades, like we're saying, like the team with the better player always wins, but really it's kind of the upside of all the other players, right? I mean, it's the same with my trade with Ben, and then this trade here, Sam. If Javonte Williams is what, man, I mean, just a year ago today, Javonte Williams was the running back of the few, you know, he was a top, maybe I'm blemishing it a little bit, but, you know, I would say he was close to a top five dynasty asset without even touching the field. And then he gets hurt, you know, him, Breece Hall and Jonathan Taylor, I feel like they were the running backs to have. So, yeah, if you can get back to that form, obviously, yeah, you end up winning this trade, I think, just by Javonte Williams panning out and being the age that he is. So, yeah, good trade. It's always fun to see the big names come up on your screen in Sleeper. So yeah, let's keep the trades going, boys. We'll see some more. Jonathan's got players to move. So, did we want to go over some of the free agents that are sitting in there? I know it's kind of a tough thing to talk about because you don't want to give up your diamond in the rough, but I mean, I think there's plenty of camp news that there's probably some guys that we can talk about that are kind of obvious. Are there any that you've seen on your Twitter feed, your X feed, or your Instagram feed that you want to that is worthy of talking about?
I guess I'll start because I just traded my free agent pick to Chris. Part of it was true just busyness and lack of ability to kind of focus on this stuff with the week of work I've had, but part of it was like, okay, somebody else is paying attention to the free agents here, and I'll kick that can down the road by just absorbing a ton of fab and getting a free agent I really, really want or need later in the year. So anyways, because I have no skin in this game, I mean, ultimately, I guess after 14 players are picked, then guys I like that are still out there will be priorities for me. But to maybe make like it less of a show your hand, I'm just looking at like the Sleeper trending players. The top guy on that list is this Jason Brownlee. I'm not following Camp Buzz, but somebody else in our group chat recently mentioned his name to me. And I imagine that maybe Aaron Rodgers fluffed him up once or something. And it's a guy who was on the bubble and is now looking like he's going to be, you know, a camp star. Anyways, that name doesn't mean anything other than to me, like, okay, he's on the Jets. He's got a potential to catch passes from Aaron Rodgers. Our league is just so deep that it's hard. It's not only that the roster spots are where they are, cause we've got whatever it is, 25, we've got the taxi, the IR, but it's that we also have 14 teams. So like that's another additional 50 plus players that typical dynasty leagues that are average depth like ours, have in the free agent pool. So like I'm scrolling through this trending list and, you know, a name that has been on my radar because of just being in the news was Melvin Gordon having signed with the Ravens because Dobbins is unhappy with his contract situation. But like nobody really wanted Melvin Gordon on their fantasy team last year. Like his, just going to probably be a plotter and never know when you can rely on him. So
I saw Jimmy Graham was trending. It's like, why would he be in anybody's league? Like he's so irrelevant. Like,
right.
He's back, man.
I guess. Just want a taste of Jimmy Graham. It's the guys who never had him on the roster in his prime. And they just want a taste. Yeah.
I don't know, Sam or Eli, are there guys popping off for either of you that you don't feel like are showing your cards too much?
No, not really for me. I just pulled up our free agent draft from last year. And I think that, so there's, I see two guys that I think are still on rosters and maybe TJ Vashner maybe is, I don't know. Nick Westbrook Inkeen or whatever, however you say his name, he might be on someone's roster but shouldn't be on anybody's. Other than I've got Jerick McKinnon that I took at pick number 5, and then obviously Canute took Geno Smith, who that was the shock of the year, and he's on Josh's roster now. So I think of the 14 picks, I'm pretty sure two guys are still rostered. Again, maybe a couple other ones, Sam, maybe Benny Snell is, but again, nobody really relevant. So, yeah.
Yeah. That was going to be my comment is I don't see a Geno Smith this year in the same way. I mean, I didn't think Geno Smith was going to be Geno Smith last year, but at the same time, there's nobody I'm excited about. There's a couple guys, if they're there, I'll take a chance on, I suppose, but it's kind of what happened last year where I just took a guy because I'm supposed to. Commissioner
yeah,
said,
no, it's,
and
yeah,
it's, and then it didn't work out. So yeah, I'm not really. I don't have high hopes on anybody who's left. I think that there's this guy named Tom Brady on the free agent list, so I might take a stab at him. Rob Gronkowski's there. I don't know. A couple. You might not know them. They're not household names, but
Well, they're all spoken for technically because they retired, right? So
yeah, take a look when you click on their name in Sleeper. If they retired while on roster, I've made notes of that so that the most recent owner has first right of refusal there. So yep, those guys are off limits. The only other like trend I'm seeing here is that there's three Colts running backs that are in the top 20-ish: Deion Jackson, what's the other guy's names? Zach Moss and Evan Hall, and they're all rostered. Sam, you got the last guy there in the rookie draft. And so they're of course in the news because of JT, but in traditional leagues where those guys might be quick pickups here, just as roster holds to see what happens. There's really not even much juice to squeeze there given the depth of our roster. So yeah, honestly, I don't see there being that much to be excited about here. Can't imagine anybody flat out passing on their pick, because if you've got an open roster spot, at least doesn't hurt to make the dart throw. But I think I flip my pick, which Chris used on McIntosh, and given the news in Seattle that both running backs ahead of him were hurt, like that was the clear pick for me too. But like there's a reason that this rookie who came from Georgia was not drafted at all in 5 rounds of a rookie draft in our league. I don't know if, I don't know much about the player to like speak to his talent, but it's clearly an opportunity play where like he's buried behind Ken Walker and now Charbonnet. So Walker's still hurt. Charbonnet's back at practice and who knows how long Walker's out, but it's not like they've said he's out for the year. So I just, even now, like I got $50 and a third round pick for that player that most likely isn't going to see Chris's starting lineup. So maybe he does, we've had the James Robinsons in this league, but that's kind of how I'm kind of viewing and down on the free agents that are available right now.
Speaking of which, I think he's one of the current free agents you can pick up, James Robinson.
Yeah, he's in the New York Blue, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Which would have been valuable if Saquon was holding his ground, but now that he's back in camp.
Yeah, I think he might have flipped over to the not trending list because of that. So it's usually how it goes. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, so last time Jonathan and I were on, we did the position groups, just going over in our league who we thought was who had the best position rooms. Well, since then, there's been some pretty big trades, but thought, Sam, we'll give you a shot, kind of hear your opinion, see if you agree with Jonathan and I. And again, things have changed, but wanted to see, did you put anything together where you could kind of go through that?
Yeah, I did a quick run through, and I would love to share that. Do you guys have your list still that we can compare them to, or just going to go through mine?
You can go through yours. I think I've got mine. If I wanted to chime in and say that I agreed or not, I bet we agree on quarterback rooms. But I think Jonathan and I actually maybe we did disagree on what was one and two. So let's just hear what you've got, and we can kind of chime in. And again, things have changed, so I think Jonathan and I, if there's something we want to add, we'll jump in.
Sounds good. Yeah. So starting with quarterback room. Like you guys mentioned, I think we have a pretty clear top two. And so no surprise, I would put Chris at number one. I think the room with Mahomes wins. He's number one. And then I'd put Jeremy at number two. Because it's so clear, I put in that I feel like both Bort and Josh have solid quarterback rooms. And so honorable mentions. Depending on, I think that Josh's room would look good if everyone's healthy and at full form, I suppose. But just from their name value, Kyler and Watson are solid. But anyway, so I'd throw those two guys as honorable mentions. However, I think it's really clear Chris and Jeremy are our top two for quarterbacks.
I think we missed Josh completely last time, didn't we? Do we even mention his quarterback room?
I don't think I spoke to it. We might have briefly hit on Deshaun, but Kyler coming back from injury and not knowing like when he's going to play, particularly thinking more short term. And I know that was the lens you kind of approached this through, Eli. We didn't talk about it. But yeah, certainly if those guys get back to anywhere close to where they've each been, and they're both still youngish, I think they're in their 20s. So Kyler certainly is. I think Deshaun still is. So there's a chance. But
he's got Geno too. So. Having a third is a big deal too.
Sure, good call.
Yeah, good point.
Josh better trade all of them. he's got to blow it up, but maybe we talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, Chris has got a bunch of picks. Maybe he could put Kyler as his third string quarterback.
There you go. All right, then moving into running backs, I would say number one running back room is Jonathan, especially after recent trades. I think he supports his team name well. And I think it's very clear. It's not like a close 1-2. I think Jonathan has by far the best running back room. And then I had a hard time, so I just put down two names for kind of two A and B. I think Jeremy and Dan were kind of 1-2 for me, Dan Krause. Again, there's a lot of teams with a good running back, but for me, it was just looking at teams that had at least two, with maybe some depth to help out. Any thoughts there? Do you want me to elaborate more on that?
Well, I just want to list off Jonathan's running backs. I think most of us know who he has, but I mean, just to hear them all in a row: Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey, and then DeAndre Swift. Like, yeah, that's just crazy. And J.K. Dobbins. I should have said him before Swift, I think, in my opinion. I don't know what the overall consensus is, but I like Dobbins. So Robinson, Taylor, McCaffrey, Dobbins, Swift. Yeah, pretty crazy.
Also, I guess it should be noted that I made my list about this year. If I were to say whose room would I trade for right now? So that's how I was doing it, not necessarily in a long-term dynasty sense, but just on a like, hey, this year or maybe this and next year, like who's looking the best right now? So, looking at just the starting lineup for Jeremy. You got Eckler, you got Chubb, you got Montgomery in there. I feel like he has another guy on his roster. Cook. Yeah. So solid room there. And then I was going to pull up Dan's as well.
He's got Barkley, Henry, and Mixon. Those are the three. I think Eli ranked him first. And then I twisted his arm to include me in his top two originally. But
yeah. Twisted my arm and made some monster trades just to make it so I can't deny it now.
Fair. So if there's not any, I'll move into receivers. And I'd say wide receiver is probably the hardest one for me to rank, partly because there's just so many good receivers in the league right now. And with the way that the NFL is, it's just like, man, there's so many good receivers out there. So for my taste, I would put Eli. I would say that you're now in number one after your trade. Just a really strong four, for sure. And so that gets number one for me. And then at number two, I'd put Bort. And then in terms of honorable mention, I put both me and Chris as like honorable mentions, mainly because at the top, a couple of studs, but I think both Eli and Bort have more to be talked about there in their rooms.
No Ben, AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Ayuk.
And that's what I'm saying. I think you could really go through a lot of the rosters. Ben would be next on my list after he'd be five. And you could twist my arm and say he's better than mine or Chris's, but I would put him just behind us.
I think I put Ben. I certainly put him over Chris. I say looking at your sandwich. I mean, if we're looking, strictly at this year, obviously Cup and Adams. I still think I put Ben ahead of you, Sam. I just like, CD Brown and Ayuk. He's got that third one where that third one for you is Terry McLaurin, which again, he's just kind of an up in the air guy right now.
Yep. And I love Lamb. I think he's a great player, and Brown has done really well in Philadelphia and what I'd imagine to continue to do so. I like Ayuk, although I traded Ayuk to Ben way back when. I think he has a solid roster. And that's just it. Like there are multiple teams that have solid wide receiver rooms. There's depending on if you like the young guys, if you like the vets. So yeah. But I would put Eli and Bort as the top two.
Yeah. In your defense, again, Kupp and Adams both have wide receiver one ceilings, so they could go 1-2 and you prove us all wrong. And you're the best receiving group in all of it just because of those two. So we'll see. But
Eli, I don't think you made my top two last time. And I think the addition of Waddle bumps you up there. I hadn't really given a thought like dynasty versus contending kind of win now in season ranks, but hard to pick against Bort with Tyreek, Chase, and like specifically win now player in like DeAndre Hopkins, and heck, who knows what Michael Thomas will do this year, but Adam Thielen, like he's got some really old dudes that have done it before. I think he's got a good contending locker room there, but I think your wide receiver room with Waddle, Smith, Godwin, Judy, and then when you said like solid four, I don't know if it was Judy or Ridley in that mix for you, but like both those guys, like to me, like that's a pretty strong five. So you're in like really good shape there.
I forgot about Judy. Yeah. Five. So.
Yeah, no, I hate to be that guy. I don't know why I would trade any of these guys. I hate those guys who are like unwilling to let go of anybody, but man, I just don't stop. Unless I crash and burn for some reason and need draft picks, like, I mean, I see these guys on my roster for a very long time. I mean, you can come to me with offers, but you have to overpay for these guys. Just like I feel like I overpaid for Waddle. I mean, that's what you do to get those kind of guys. So yeah, thanks. Yeah. I'm flattered, but yeah, I'm excited about my room too.
Yeah, and I would say age played a part of it of why I would. I mean, because Bort again also has depth, has a lot of guys, big name guys, but you know, Michael Thomas coming off of injury, Hopkins on a new team. There's just a few guys who they could easily be a fantastic thing, and I would still trade for him. That's a solid group. So,
right on. Did you have a tight end room as well?
Yeah, and I think tight end was difficult in the opposite direction of wide receiver because it just feels like tight end is such a weak position in the fantasy wise in the NFL right now. There's what, three guys who really run everything, and one guy who's, so for me it was Kelce is whatever room Kelce is in is number one because he's number one until he's not. And so I put Dan at number one, and then I put Peter at number two. With the way that Ingram showed up last year in Jacksonville, and if you can build on that, and with Pitts, I think that's a solid room. So yeah, that's my 1-2.
Yeah, it's such a weird position. I mean, even in our league, making it a tight end premium, we try to make this position valuable. But yeah, you're right. It's the top two, top three that you want. And beyond that, it's kind of a crapshoot. And we try to pretend like there's going to be some sleeper in the middle every year, and there's not. There just never is, you know, never is. So yeah, I think you kind of were spot on with what Jonathan and I said with the rooms as well. I think Jonathan put Peter number one and Dan number two, I think was the only difference. So.
Makes sense. All right.
So it's been almost an hour, I think. Do we want to touch on some rules at all? We could sit here for another 24 hours and if we want, and just sit here and wait. There's nothing saying we can't. Jonathan,
I know. Honestly, I don't know. I haven't looked to see how explicit we are about the 24 hour pick clock for free agent drafts. But yeah, I'll take it on the chin.
Yeah, I think we just need to, as a league. I mean, it's not your fault. I'm giving you a hard time. But as a league, we just needed to decide, because if we don't have, if there's no consequence to a rule, then there's no rule. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing to do is to establish like pick forfeiture, or at least like, I think what the NFL does is like the team following your time limit can pick, and the subsequent teams can pick until you make your selection. I know that happened to the Vikings back in the day, but
right.
Like when that's happened, we've had one or two total owners miss a 24-hour clock in the real rookie draft. And it's just felt like the wrong thing to do to say, you're going to miss this spot. We're in June and we're not going to be patient for you because you had something come up. You're busy with family work. Now, like if you took a week and everybody's like, come on, man, like just make a pick or trade it so like we can all like have our fun. That's a different story, but like, again, like I'm with you in spirit, like rules need to have consequences or what's the point. But like, that's been my approach to enforcing that thing in the past. So, and obviously I think it's like quite a bit lighter here with free agents that most are very right. Not excited about, but yeah, like that's how I thought about it with the rookie draft. So probably worth like putting in writing, but hard, like it'd be hard for me to like enforce that on somebody like, three or four months before the season starts. Like we are so impatient that we must do this now.
Yeah. I think it's clarity. Like, and that's like when it says 24 hours, especially in the rookie draft, when you have a clock that's ticking down and then it hits zero and nothing happens. You know, that's where the like, well, then it's not a 24 hour clock and let's just call it what it is. If it's not a 24 hour clock, then it's not. And that's fine. And I agree with you. I would hate to see somebody lose a pick, lose a player or whatever, because they were an hour off. And so like in the end, like I don't want someone to be punished, but would love for things to move as we all expect them to. If you have 24 hours to make the pick, then make the pick or communicate in a way where I'm sure as commissioner, you can pause a draft in a extreme circumstance or somebody's can't get to a pick or something like that. But
Of course, if somebody genuinely missed their clock because they're with family or something, that's one thing. But some people, you know, it's like when you allow that, then you allow for people to abuse it as well, which could easily happen if you're waiting for a, you know, maybe you're waiting for an injury or you're waiting for somebody to sign somewhere. Like, but you said, you know, I mean, it's you're right. It's not that big of a deal, but it just would be the more clear we can be on it, the more sturdy it is, the more rules, the more sturdy the rule is. I just feel like, yeah, there's less to complain about, less to bicker about. And most of my comments are in satire, but I digress.
For sure. So Mark, quit being a heel, make your pick. And let's get on with this thing.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I kind of like the Viking rule, you know, if you don't pick it, the next person gets to pick and you can still pick. It's just that you're going to be after where you originally were slotted. And that's where the punishment comes in. Like then it's, you don't lose the pick entirely, but something like that makes a lot of sense to me.
I like that too, actually. Yeah. You can maybe put that in the rule change options or whatever. So.
Cool. Well, yeah. Sam made the formal suggestion for a rule change that, well, you made a two-part suggestion. One is one that we talked about at the end of the season and is definitely going to be something that's a part of the league this year, which is the addition of a seventh playoff team. We'll have one, the first seed will get a bye week, but that's the only team that gets a bye week. I love that. I love the addition of like the seventh team. But I really like that, particularly if you're the reigning champ, having one fewer elimination game is such a big advantage that like you need to make sure that you lock up that one seed in order to do that rather than be a top two seed. So like it happened, so happened this past year that Jeremy, as dominant as he was, and I think he scored the most points, he may actually not have, I don't remember, but Krause was our first place in terms of victory points. And anyways, two teams both had bye weeks, and we all know how it ended. But outside of a true act of God for our league, Jeremy would have won back to back. And again, he could have steamrolled whoever he played in the first week had he needed to. But I do like that just makes it that much harder for the league to end, and one more team gets a shot in the playoffs. So that is something that like we're going to do. I'm excited about that. The approach to that would be the same as current, where right now top five teams with victory points get in, and then the highest point scored team takes the sixth slot. We'll just move that back one. Top six victory point teams, and then the highest scoring team will take number seven. But Sam, the second part to your suggestion was to turn week 14 into a play-in game for that seventh seed. Essentially, all the other teams are determined by victory points through the first 13 weeks. And then in week 14, the teams who have like the outside looking in teams, basically like seventh and eighth seeds with the highest points scored total, will play each other in a head-to-head matchup. Or maybe you're saying we don't even reseed. You still have your mug matchups, but like the outcome of like whichever of those two teams scores the most points that week, right. Kind of like the play-in game. So help me just kind of unpack that a little bit more, and if I'm misunderstanding the suggestion at all.
No, you nailed it. I think it's fun when more people have something to play for, and so to give somebody something to watch, I think. Our whole league on that last week, like right now, having the week 14 be three victory points for the top half is a cool way to deal with the problem that we have for 13 opponents and 14 weeks. I understand why we're set up the way that we are, but was trying to think of a way that one, it's still the most fair. You play every single opponent once, and then whatever record you are, that's what gets you into the playoffs. And then that week 14 can be more about the mugs and fun and like that competitive nature of like, I want to win against my rival. And for two teams, it's that one last chance to get in. And so that person who's sitting on the outside and in seat number eight actually has a chance to make it into the playoffs. And I think that could create some fun if a team who would have been eighth and would have never had a chance now beats seven, gets in, and then makes a run like that. That's a fun, you know, we all like the Cinderella story in the March Madness or wherever. And so that was the thought, is maybe it creates some fun. It still allows for only half the league to get into the playoffs, but eight teams feel like they had a chance at the playoffs. And so I think that's a fun element that it could potentially bring.
Yeah, I really like that play-in game idea. That's really cool. So are you saying it would be the top, so the two like highest scorers that are outside the playoffs would be in, or the highest scorer with the lowest amount of victory points that was going to be in the playoffs? You see what I'm saying? Am I phrasing that right?
Yeah, so in my mind, the cleanest way to do it is, I think Jonathan said it correctly, if I remember right, the two teams who have the highest points, instead of just the highest point team gets in, it's the top two highest point teams have to play each other for who goes in. That seems to be the cleanest way, but I'd be open to, there's other ways, other metrics you could do for who are those two teams that play for each other, but you'd have the victory points people seal the deal, they're in. And then your points people who are making that last slot, the top two of those to a play-in game was the way that I thought about it. But I think there's other ways that it could work, but that seems to be a clean way to do it. So
be clear, we're talking about seven teams ultimately getting into the playoffs. The first six get in because they have the six most victory points in the league, and that's finalized after week 13. And then in week 14, the teams that are not one of those six and have the highest scoring points, that those two teams at the top of that list will play each other. And if team eight beats team seven, even if they don't end up finishing the season with more points scored than team seven, they get the playoff spot because of a head-to-head victory there. Yeah.
So right. I guess that's where it gets messy, because we, as of last year, that week 14 or whatever, that last week, the mug week, we still counted our victory points towards getting into the playoffs, right? Where if we did it this way, we're losing a week of victory points, right?
Correct.
Yeah, we would be. Because otherwise
the playoff, that play-in game wouldn't necessarily get you into the playoffs, because there's a way that things could change after that. So that might get a little confusing.
Yeah, you'd have to have it finalized through week 13.
Which I think about it a little more. I just don't know if I like that as much, losing a week of potential victory points. You know, I'd have to think about it more. I haven't thought about it at all.
I'd be curious how much that actually swings things, because unless somebody just, you know, has a really bad week at the end of the season, like giving three victory points to the top half scoring teams in week 14, it should just be the rich getting richer at that point in the season. So I'm sure there have been poor teams that have won there and like picked up a huge amount, you know, picked up 3 points and gained and passed somebody that had a bad week. But
I think a very possible scenario is that team seven, right? So let's call it the team that, if we didn't do this play-in game, they're the highest score, right? There's a very possible scenario that person, if they could just play through week 14, would get enough victory points to get an automatic slot in the playoffs, but instead they lose to the second lowest scorer, and then they're out of the playoffs completely. So that's a very real possibility. And if we're willing to accept that, then that's fine. But yeah, that would be a tough way to go, knowing if we would have just kept it how it is, I'm not only am I in the playoffs, but I'm not even the bottom seed.
It's basically the playoffs start in week 14 and there's one wild card matchup, right?
Correct. Yep. And for me, the reason why it would be okay in my book for the shift of those, like, yeah, that's three less victory points you can get and all the rest, is that week 14 is already different. It's not like any other week where I can get 1 point or I can get 2 points or I can get 3 points or, you know, like in the victory points. I can get two or three victory points. It's like to just get three if you win. If you're in the top half, is all week 14 is already different. And so this is just a different way of being different. The record, your record is set after week 13 because you played everybody once. And so what's your record? And that's what gets you into the playoffs. So for me, it felt like this is just a different way to approach that. What do we do with the week 14? And if it's more exciting and brings more energy and more people get a chance at the playoffs, then that seems like a win to me. But I do hear what you're saying. It would suck if you're in that bottom spot and your team has a bad week and you end up missing. And yeah, that would be unfortunate. But I think there's already those elements in any way that you slice it.
Yeah.
Your team's has a bad last week. So.
Yeah, no, and I like the way you laid it out. You played every team once already, so boom, and then boom, the season ends. That is a good way to look at it. And I do like having all eyes on one game before the playoffs even, you know, technically start. I think that's fun. I like that. Whenever, you know, it's like a championship, you know, yeah, it's a wild card game. It's great.
All right, so let me noodle on that one. Like I said, I'm more or less decided on the expansion of a seventh team and having just the top seed have a bye week. But because it doesn't impact how teams will try to play this year, everybody's, you know, that's going to try to be competitive is going to be competitive to the very end. So we'll make a decision before the season. But I need to think on that one and maybe hear some more feedback from the rest of the league as this gets out into the wild. So I'm looking at some of the other suggestions. We've got a couple from you, Eli, here. One, this was during the fifth round, I believe, and you said eliminate the fifth round of rookie drafts. We got a lot of thumbs up there. Starting immediately, I'd have to look to see if any fifth rounders for 26 have been traded yet. But yeah, that honestly, it seems like there's quite a bit of support there. It's like a slow burn anyways. And anybody that like doesn't get picked there just makes the free agent pool a little bit more enticing. And here we are, free agent draft, and we're all going, meh, I don't really care about these guys. So that is like an interesting pivot that we could consider making.
I support that one. I think for what you just said, I think it creates more intrigue on the free agent side. If we keep the free agent draft, it makes that more interesting. But regardless of that part, just free agency in general, there's more of a pool of guys that you're interested in, and creates a reason for free agent dollars. Again, I think is something that we'd see an uptick in how the waiver wire goes for at least 1 week, if not a couple weeks. So,
yep. And Eli, you had a suggestion to introduce the next new available year of draft picks prior to the draft to give more ammo and get more trading. You got a lot of thumbs up on this one. So I think this was rooted in your and Sam's deal to ship Derek Carr, and you kind of arranged it already that as soon as your 26 pick was available that you'd ship it off and make the deal. But you were kind of wanting to make that before the actual draft this year. So any additional context on that one?
Yeah, no, good. Okay, yeah, I thought there were more thumbs down than there actually are. There's only two. I was kind of surprised that there were any because it's like, why? Yeah, I just don't see why not. You know, if we can get the picks a little earlier and make the season's over, you know, once the season's over and the championship game is done, I say, you know, why not? Why not, get those picks going and we can start trading.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. I guess like to play devil's advocate, you'd say, well, why not 4 years out picks, and then why not 5 years out? Cause like, that's more and more fun. So like part of me, and we've never done this in leagues I've run, is like require like annual buy-ins for years where you trade future assets. So like, if you're going to trade a pick from 2 years out, you got to pay up front for that league year. So that if you like run that team into the ground and orphan it, that like the team that takes over isn't just completely screwed. Like, okay, well your buy-in's covered or whatever. So since we're already not doing that and we're trading picks that are at times 3 years out, it's not like that big of a jump to make to say like, okay, for this period of a couple months, we're going to open up yet another additional year of picks. But like just something that's like on my mind as I think about like controls and safety for the league. But ultimately, like, going into draft season, if, like, even at the start of the rookie draft, like, okay, come June 1, if that's when we continue to kick it off, like, now our, you know, picks for the 3 years out or whatever are also available to be in the mix. I do think that that would be kind of an interesting twist, because ultimately it's accelerating that decision by like 1 month, and in a period where a lot of trades happen during actual draft season, it could be a cool way to just see some bigger assets move, because you've got more chips to throw on the table.
I fully agree with all that. I think that there's always that risk, but because it's only, like you're saying, a month different, or if you did it a week or two before the draft starts, whatever, it's like, if it's a 6 week difference in when they come, because of the way that our draft works and the trades that are already happening, I think it would add excitement and potential, the possibility for trades that people who maybe didn't have the assets that they would have made to move into the first round or something, now they have something to get them there. And so we could see some more movement, which is fun in our league. So.
For sure. I see a few other suggestions here that honestly, I'm just going to kill right now, but one was trim bench spots, 3 to 5 slots. Not going to do that. Another was make the toilet bowl winner get 115 again. We're not going to do that. That's too rich. I'm up to making it something maybe slightly more enticing than 215. Eli, you were the recipient of that one this year, but honestly, like, that doesn't seem like it's, no one's in the toilet bowl is not trying to win. They definitely don't want to lose the toilet bowl. So it's like, cool. I'm sure you felt like, all right, that's nice, I got that pick. It wasn't like you won the Super Bowl, but would you have
exactly
felt?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah. It was like, yeah, cool. Yep. Nice to have an extra pick. And that's what it should be. It doesn't need to be a Super Bowl, because you shouldn't be there in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you intentionally tanked all season and now you're in there and like going to clean up an extra first round pick. Like, that just doesn't seem like the right thing to do. And made that mistake.
Chris is smiling ear to ear, because that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did.
Yep. Exactly. Fortunately, wasted that year's pick on Trey Lance. So it washed.
Yeah.
So did the 49ers.
Yeah.
No, I think he got Terrence Marshall, but still.
No, yeah, I'm saying he tanked all year for Trey Lance. So
gotcha. Yeah.
That's okay that
he could have picked Justin Fields. I was shocked he didn't. I thought he was gonna, my bet was Justin Fields, for the record.
What about the pick that would be, well, I don't know what that would be, 20 something. The second round, the pick right between where our playoff teams are and where the toilet bowl teams are. So basically you let the toilet bowl get all their picks, and then it's that next
2.0 between 7 and 8. Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's I think the highest I'd be willing to go, and something that I'd think about. Maybe getting more of a specific pulse from the league on that number. But yeah, I think that going anything higher than a mid second is too rich there. So, speaking of tanking, you know, there's some other suggestions around like what we do to potentially prevent that. Bort made the suggestion that we use, the lowest max points total. And that's something that Sleeper calculates, for us, just like what were potential points. And his point, which I think is well received, is if you choose to tank, you actually have to sell off your assets, or like you're hurt or whatever. Right. But like, you don't have studs that are scoring for you on the bench. And it, you know, ultimately rewards the actual worst team, with a high pick that they need to improve. And so, he finished off that suggestion by saying, be happy to expand that from, you know, the first overall pick to the first and second overall picks as well. I like this. I've always had a problem with tanking, and given the loophole and how it's been used, you know, throughout our leagues, obviously I took advantage of it last year myself, but, I think that, you know, a league is better when there's parity. And if teams that, you know, potentially could sneak into the playoffs, but know they can't win at all, decide to just suck all year and then load up it in draft and come back next year. I mean, again, I'll speak from example, you know, from personal experience right now. Like, I feel like my team right now is in a better position to compete this year than it was last year. And I don't think I would have won the championship last year had I tried. So like, I think that there's a system to be gamed right now. And I don't know if it's like in the best interest of the league or really just the spirit of like fantasy football and like competitiveness. So I'm all for a solution that tries to solve for that, whether it's this or something else, but curious what you guys think on a potential solution there.
Yeah, I heard, and maybe this is what Bort is saying. I heard just today on a podcast that basically the draft order is decided by your best, like basically your best ball score. And some formats, like I don't know if Sleeper is one of them, allow you to have that setting as well. So you're keeping track of your, like the complete score of your full roster on top of your, you know, head-to-head matchups. I think that's a great way to keep things competitive. And I haven't thought about it too much, but it's similar to what Bort is saying, but it's just, you know, completely, you're always trying to have the best players from top to bottom, you know, all your starters and your bench players. You're always trying to have the best players. So again, I agree with what you're saying as far as tanking clearly has benefit for Dynasty. So I don't even know if I am completely against tanking, because I heard kind of a similar argument on that same podcast today. And it's like, it does. But yeah, in the spirit of fantasy football and of competitiveness, as you said, yeah, I think you got to kind of try to keep people away from it. But it's also kind of hard to do that now that people have tanked in this league. Like, it almost seems like something you might have to address in an entirely new league. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I really like the suggestion. And I like it. I think what you were saying, Eli, is you could do it for the entire league, that it's not just the number one pick, but the whole league could be decided by. I like the fact that if you just have the top one or two, three, whatever, the top one or two teams that are done this way, then you for sure have your worst team getting the number one pick, and that helps with parity. But for somebody who tanks, if their roster is still better, but they're tanking to try to get assets, well, they still are going to end up with the second or third pick or whatever. So there's to try to find ways to get your team better by losing for a year to get better. There's still a way to do that, but it discourages ultimate tanking because you're not going to get the guy at the number one pick. And so, yeah, I think that does help, and it helps our teams that just for whatever reason are in the bottom, like, okay, well now that gives you the best chance to get out of it. I understand the NBA lottery, but I also hate the NBA lottery when the worst team doesn't get the first pick. It's, you know, it's like, well, that team's now in the sixth pick and good luck for them, you know? So anyway, I think that it's unfortunate when the worst team in our league doesn't get an opportunity at the first pick.
Right. Yeah. And the NBA lottery is rigged. Every draft class is different in terms of like where the shelf is for like truly elite, like generational type talents, but I'd be open to expanding that potential points scoring through the top three. I don't know if I'd want to go
to the max.
I'd go to four, but yeah. But to your point, yeah, if we only did the top one, like great. If you tanked all year and could have done better, getting number two overall is still pretty sweet. But like, I would have certainly thought twice about it, or flat out, I would not have done it if the ceiling I could have earned was 104 last year. So I think that's definitely something for us to consider. To be very clear, I would not make a switch where our entire draft order top to bottom was determined by potential points, because then we're basically just playing in a best ball league, and that's not what we're trying to do. Like, you make roster decisions, you have head to head, we have victory point format for a reason, and so none of that wouldn't change. But for the teams that are already at the bottom, using potential points to order the top two or three draft positions are is a very viable solution for a league. And to your point, Eli, like, I think because yes, we've allowed it before in this league, but each year is so independent from the last that like, I guess if anybody's going into this season thinking like, oh, I want to tank this year, then a rule change on that front is like, yeah, it's bad news for that team. So I guess
yeah. No, I like the bottom three or whatever, or, you know, the top three picks, the bottom three teams being, I like that idea. And yeah, cause I'm with you. That was just an idea I heard on a podcast today. I agree with you. I wouldn't want to, yeah, I want my record to decide my draft position, but if it's presenting, but to prevent tanking, I think it is for the bottom three, top three, however you want to look at it. I like that idea a lot. I would probably give a thumbs up to that rule.
Yeah. Cool.
I think the one issue you might run into if it were to be established, say this year, is that picks have been traded. And so like where maybe that if this rule had been in place, a team on the bottom might not have used their pick to be traded, knowing that they got a bad enough roster to be in the top three. So that'd be one element to consider about when it takes effect, but I think it's a good rule regardless.
Well, what are you saying there though? Like if they made a trade that made their team worse, like they're not tanking in the wrong way. Like they're kind of tanking in the right way, right? Like they're selling.
Yeah, I'm saying that the worst team might not have their own pick, and therefore the team that has that pick now has an automatic top three in a sense. And this is me thinking off the top of my head. I haven't processed it a whole lot. I love the rule as it is, and people trade their picks free will. So that's a part of the game. And so I like the rule and I'd put it in place, but that might be the one element you might get pushback from people if it gets put in place right away is like, well, now that
sure, you're talking about whoever has Josh's pick and Mark's pick, and now they're like, well, that was supposed to be one or two, and now it might be, and now it
well,
might not.
No. If you've traded your pick, you're not going to be intentionally tanking, right? You have no interest in doing so. So if those picks, yeah, we're good there. It's more anybody who's like, I think Pete owns his pick. If he was looking at his year, I mean, like, I can't win it all this year. There's some really sexy names at the top of the 24 class. I'm going to run it back and tank again. He could at least make the case that like he was planning to do that and this hurts him. So,
so sorry, this only implies to people who were clearly intentionally tanking. It's not just the bottom three teams.
Well,
because then it could affect that draft pick that, you know, Mark could end up finishing in last place, but not last in points. So now Mark's, you know, you had Mark's pick. He did finish last, just like you thought, but actually his points aren't last. So now it's the third pick instead of the first, and you're holding. Well, I don't even know who has Mark's pick right now, but you see, does that make sense what I'm saying, or am I missing something?
Yeah, but most likely if he finishes in last, it's because he scored the fewest or close to the fewest points this year, right?
Sure.
So, like, there's a chance, that's slightly changed, and the worst team actually had the second worst potential points, and so there's that pivot there, but it could go, you know, the other way too, where he snuck in and won a got a victory point, but he actually was the worst. So, like, I'm not too worried about that. It really is just protecting from teams that could have won and been competitive and chose not to be. So,
sure. Yeah, I think I think I'm agreeing with Sam as far as like it's minor. It's very, yeah, it's minor. I'm probably talking about it too much already, but it's somebody made a trade before this rule was put in place. So you could have some backlash there. That's all. I think that's what Sam's point was.
Yep. That's my only point. And is that backlash worth not making a good rule change? No, I think good rule change is always worth it, but that might be the only pushback on it.
Yeah.
Good point.
Makes sense.
Good point.
I see another one that's got like fairly unanimous support, which is just eliminating the waiting period on a trade. Whether Sleeper says it's 2 days or 1 day, like whatever it is right now, it always seems like it takes longer than that. So I think the only reason we have a waiting period at all is to allow for a veto, which we don't allow in our league. It's just like commissioner power, basically, if something truly feels like collusion. So if that were the case, I could undo it after it goes through. Like, so to solve for that particular concern, we don't need the trade waiting period to fix that problem. So that seems like a pretty straightforward thing that everybody's in favor of. Like, we agree on a trade, like, let's swap these players. I think another trade related rule is how we think about trade deadlines. And right now our deadline is later than most leagues that do it in like week 11. We do it like right before the playoffs in week 13 or 14. But there is an argument to be made that there should be no trade deadline at all. It's dynasty. It's truly year round. And if, you know, you are a great team all year and your quarterback went down and you're willing to go all in and sell that good quarterback for a tier down quarterback that's not injured to help you like compete in a playoff game, like, you should be able to do that. And so curious if you guys have thoughts on if that should be limited to like playoff teams can only trade with, you know, other playoff teams, or league wide across the board, non-playoff teams can trade with each other. Like, the real concern where you get into like collusion land is if you see a bottom feeder trade a tier one stud to somebody going into a championship game who's like, okay, I'll split the pot with you kind of thing. Right. And again, I don't think that we've got the guys in this home style league to worry about that. And again, like, I can always, if something's truly got that vibe, undo it. But to some of the conversation earlier, like, hey, more trading is better and more fun. Like, why would we impose it an arbitrary deadline? If the only thing we're really trying to solve for is the potential for collusion, that doesn't seem like it's an issue in this particular league.
I guess where I stand on it, and this is as somebody who lost his QB2 and my Superflex QB going into the playoffs and was trying to trade all the way up to the last minute to get, I mean, I traded for Matt Ryan because I was that desperate. Like, I still would prefer to have a trade deadline where when you go into the playoffs, you're going in with your team. I think I don't like the idea that the week of championship, somebody can trade for new superstars to try to win the championship. Like, I think the teams should be the teams, and injuries happen, and that's unfortunate. But to me, one of the things that I like about our league is it feels like the closest thing I'll ever have to being an owner of an NFL team, like, with the ways that we with all the things that we do. It just feels like I actually have a team that's my guys and all the trades. And one of the things that's fun in the NFL is, like, they don't trade in the playoffs. Like, your team is your team outside of free agents and they can sign. I would be in favor of, and I also don't like the idea of the non-playoff teams can all trade with each other, but the playoff teams can't do any trading. I think just have a couple weeks off during the playoffs where there isn't trading, but having trading the rest of the year, there's plenty of trade season. You can take a short break for the playoffs and the championship, and you go in with your guys. So that's how I feel about it. I like the way that we're currently structured.
Yeah, I agree 100% with everything Sam said. Yeah, you definitely for sure can't do it where only playoff teams can trade with playoff teams, non-playoff can with non-playoff, or only non-playoff teams. Everybody, it has to be equal across the board. I think that's a certainty. And then with the trade deadline, I think there is a romance to having your team in the playoffs and not being able to switch it up. And I think I've talked about this before. It's a lot of strategy throughout the year should be planning for your playoff run. If you think you're a playoff team, yeah, start planning in week four, maybe sooner. Like, start planning right away. That's part of the strategy. I already say this, that the trade deadline is fun itself. I've been thinking about this in my head. The trade deadline is fun. It's exciting to see, you know, I think that sparks trades to have that deadline. And then when you reboot, like when trading is allowed again, I think that sparks more trades. Of course, a championship game would spark trades as well. But I don't like that as much. I agree with everything Sam said.
Well, and to Eli, your point about thinking towards the playoffs, the whole reason I traded for Derek Carr with you this offseason was because last year I was in a position where I had two quarterbacks and no depth. And when one went down, it took my playoff chances to almost nothing. And so I needed a third quarterback. And that's why I made it, went out and made a trade, because I hope to be a playoff team, or at least contending to. And so if I'm going to be there, I don't want to be in that same spot, and I have to prepare my team for the playoffs. And so I'm doing that now, and not 2 weeks into the playoffs, I guess. So anyway, that's where I stand on it.
All right. Makes sense. I appreciate the feedback from both of you guys on that. Sam, you're selling yourself short, saying that the closest you'll ever get to being an NFL owner because you're a Packers fan. So
I could be a legit owner. If I'm willing to give them money to improve the stadium, they'll let me be an owner. So that's true.
Oh. Okay. I think that's it for rule changes to talk over. There's one more that was vehemently opposed, where Canute had said that the toilet bowl loser should be forced into a second chance draft. And as much as I'm really dying to see the second chance draft happen, and he captured it by saying with some sort of keeper mechanism, so like you could still protect a couple of players. I think that'd be really fun. But agreed, we're investing quite a bit in our time, or of our time and our money into the teams we're building here. And if you had a bad string of weeks at the end of the season and were forced to blow that up, particularly to throw it in a pool with another team who truly did have a much worse roster and stable of players, I can imagine that wouldn't go over very well. So I like the creativity there, but not something that I feel like we can enforce in this league.
Agreed.
Awesome. All right. Eli, was there anything else that we wanted to make sure we hit tonight?
No, other than if you want to do best ball, Pete started one up. You just got to click. It's going to be free. It's just a draft. You don't have to touch your team after that. I think they're fun. It's just a way to draft with something that actually matters a little bit. Maybe we could, anyway, it's a free league. So jump in there. It's should be sitting in your sleeper invites, I would think. And then Guillotine League is starting up again soon. So get in that on Discord and vote for a draft day if you haven't already and you're a part of that league. And if you want to be a part of it, there may be one open spot. I gave it to Canute, but he might not be able to be there part of the draft. So he's on the fence right now. But let me know. It's the best fantasy league outside of the Dynasty League, that's for sure.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, Sam, it was fun to bring you into the fold tonight. Thanks for hopping on. I'm glad Eli threw this out here earlier today and we were able to just all hop on spontaneously. It's all much past our bedtimes, but it's always fun to chat fantasy. I think that wraps us up. Trade me all your running backs, guys. I'm still greedy.
Good night, Dynasty Dads. Good night, Fail League.